It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. Good to see my friend back from Sin City. I'm going to get you, the way this works, Mike, is you got to
you got to have a microphone in front of you.
Yeah, that's Mike was just talking, but you got to have a microphone with it. I mean, you're gone out to Vegas, you come back, you forget how this even works.
I forgot all about it. There's more things to do out there. I ain't think about this place.
That's right. Well, you're back, and there's a lot to talk. And let's revisit that, too, for people who did not hear last week. You're checking in from the SHOT Show out in Vegas.
Yeah.
You've told me each year you go how big this thing is. And you kind of described it like I was using the idea of the Civic Center. I mean, not the convention center, the main room at the convention center, like where all the boat show. Boat show coming right. up, by the way, boat show coming up March 3rd. We'll be back for the Guides Corner, all that good stuff. All right. So that kind of space, you said there's like,
That wouldn't even be a fourth of the size. I mean, maybe a fifth of the size of one room.
Of what? How many rooms are there?
Three. I didn't get to go see the last one. I just never made it. I mean, you know, we had meetings with Browning,
right.
meetings with Fort Knox, and lunch right. with this one and supper with that one, and having to leave early, and you right. know, and just didn't get a chance to get to that last. Well, it was on the same on the second level, but it was about half of a show that I just didn't get to see.
So this is the acronym SHOT.
Now, 3 days out there,
right? And the acronym SHOT: Shooting, Hunting, and Outdoor Trade Show. Right.
Right.
So there is, you know, there's hunting equipment, but, I mean, you're out there talking safes with Mike Burns Liberty Safes. But then there's, like you said, firearms for police and tactical stuff. But at
lots
the same time,
of that. Lots of police and tactical.
But there's also hunting stuff. And,
oh, yeah. You know, and I mean, there's hunting stuff in that because mm-hmm. they got a lot of the AR type stuff mm-hmm. that's in there. There's so many AR. I told Sarah, my wife, I said, I don't understand how there's so many AR. There must be 1,000 of them out there, AR-style mm-hmm. gun companies.
Right.
And you go from one booth to another, and they all look the same, you know, got a little different finish or a little something on it. But there's just tons of those companies out there. And I'm saying, how does that work? There's just so many of them. How do they sell that many different brands? I don't know. I couldn't understand that.
And I am far from an expert on them, but I'll say this in my knowledge, there's one thing that, okay, first of all, there's different levels of quality in them.
Yeah.
Right? So you can just
a lot
like
of parts interchange, though.
Right. But I'm saying, but let's just say the individual rifles.
Yeah.
There's some barrels are better than other barrels. The action is better than another action. So you have a kind of a price point. You know, you have different manufacturers that make it kind of in this zone. You know, somebody makes the more affordable model, not that it's not good, but then somebody makes the mid pack, and then somebody makes, you get some of these companies that they're as expensive as a fine shotgun, right?
Right.
So
that's right.
So that, there's that. And then on top of that, they design things just a little differently. You know, because the thing about the AR platforms is they're kind of like Legos for big kids. Because they got all the stuff you can attach to them, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you could put this on, that on. So I think that's what comes in the marketing, too. It's not just, it's this rifle, but it's this rifle. And if you want this thingy that goes on it, it only attaches to these manufacturers because they have this kind of, you know, so that leads to more. That's why, I mean, that's my best guess of why there are so many.
And I'm sure some of that is, a lot of that is true, I'm sure. You know, they got AR that look like a regular rifle, only they're AR type. You know, got different stocks on them, like a rifle stock, sort of.
Right.
Like a regular Browning or a Remington. But then it's got a lot of the AR parts on the, from the.
It's a hybrid of sorts.
It's a hybrid type. I mean,
but it also, so we hadn't even talked about the rounds. And, you know, so, and that's a whole world of things, you know, I've stayed interested in. Obviously, your basic, you know, 223, but. Beyond that, in AR-style rifles, like, you know, guys that hunt with me are shooting, what's the new one here? Because it's not the Blackout. The Blackout is an interesting round because if you have a suppressor, you shoot it. That's one of those rifles you can shoot that's quiet, super quiet. You can shoot subsonic ammo and almost – Because the suppressor thing gets lost on people, too, because they think, you know, you put a suppressor on and the rifle makes no noise. That's not right. True.
Yeah, it's no, that true. That is very false.
Yes.
Okay?
It helps. It's a lot better, but it's not.
It's still loud.
It's still loud.
It doesn't, if you're shooting like a, let's just say a 223. If you shoot a 223 without a suppressor on it, It's really loud.
They are loud. They're short barrel. And I don't mean that it's BR short barrel, but just any kind of shorter barrel rifle are loud.
But you put a suppressor on it, it's still real loud. It just doesn't ring your ears.
Correct.
Okay? Now, when you go to subsonic, which I've got one, and I've got subsonic ammunition.
Then you get the real.
Yeah. Then you shoot, go, toop.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
Which is a cool thing.
Yeah. It's cool, man. But it's only like. I think 800, 900 feet per second
right.
or something like that.
Subsonic,
you know?
Yeah,
But, I mean, 100, 125, 150 yards, it'll whack a hog or a deer or whatever, you know.
Right.
But you can't make any real long range shot with them.
Right.
But the other thing that I didn't realize is with a subsonic, in a 223, it will not kick the shell out when it shoots. There's not enough powder to cycle the action. Now, I think the blackout.
Yeah, 300 blackout, yeah.
I think it does.
Yeah, it does cycle.
I've seen in a subsonic it does.
That's why they're shooting that versus, you know, shooting some sort of subsonic 223.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't realize that, or I would have bought a blackout or a 308 or something.
Well, this is and my buddy hunts with me. He seems to show up with another platform every time. He's shooting now the 300 hammer. I keep going, I just learned about the blackout, man. You're killing, like,
yeah, that's a new
one. So it's just kind of going back to what you're saying about all those manufacturers out there.
Yeah.
You have different calibers on this platform, and this platform's a little different than that platform. They may share this caliber, but they've got this action, you know. So
yeah, it's so much. It's just suppressors.
It's like Legos.
Yeah,
it is. That's what. Yeah,
and then they got so many suppressor companies out there, you know, that can put suppressors. Barrel companies, stock company. I mean, anybody that likes to hunt, this would be a dream place to just go look. But you'd have to. It's a 4-day show. But if you didn't have any meetings or anything to go to, you could probably get through it maybe in 4 days.
That's crazy.
From one end of it to the other.
And that's crazy.
But
it didn't take that long.
But you could not stop on every aisle and talk to somebody for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 minutes.
You'd never get it done.
You'd never, ever get to see it. No. No way.
I think I asked you, like, not on the radio about this. Did you see, because my interest out there, I have some interest in the weaponry and the guns and all that, but – you know me. I'm obsessed with the outfitters and the cool places. You know, I know that SHOT Show gets those people.
No, just a couple of OX Ranch.
Ox Ranch. Oh, yeah, that's one. Yeah.
You know, they
you
were
didn't
out
see
there.
No sheep hunting. No.
There wasn't.
No.
Now, that you go to Safari Club in Dallas.
Yeah.
And that's where all that's at.
Yeah.
Plus a lot of manufacturers are out there, too. But if you wanted to try to get a good hunt book or something, you'd go to the Safari Club in Dallas.
All right, so next year, hopefully, I'm going with you. We'll go back to SHOT Show next year.
Well, I may not go next year, but year after.
Okay.
Yeah, about every 2 years
I've complained about,
we're going to go.
Okay, like I've complained about, though, it's because it's run by a bunch of, I'm sure, people from the Northeast and out West that they put this dang show in the middle of the rut here at home.
Yeah.
Speaking of which.
All those guys out there, I mean, they're all from the Midwest.
Yeah, they're finished.
You know? Yeah,
I know.
They're done.
And I want to go protest and say, hey,
yeah.
What about us?
Yeah, I mean, make it the middle of February.
Yeah, do February.
Middle of January.
Right, leave all the Southern boys out of it. Rut action here. You know, you and I were talking before we started the show. It's been pretty, you know, it's been pretty good. It comes and goes, but on our place, we've been seeing, I've been seeing, like, pre-rut action into full rut action since right after Christmas. I mean, we have open chasing for the last 2 weeks on our place. It's been, you know.
And I talked to my buddy Kenny Belletti. Mm-hmm. He lives down off of Bellengrave Garden Road, and he said they're going crazy down there right now. Bucks are chasing does like crazy.
Yeah, I've saw it.
So the rut's on.
Yeah, and it's pretty much – it's going to be on in that, you know, the areas that we wanted this move season end to February 10th. Those are kind of coming in. What are you hearing out of the Black Belt? Is it – fading down, or is it still open there?
No, it's still open. I've talked to several of my buddies that they're wide open up there.
Good.
You know, but that's been going on for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, that's, a good week and a half to 2 weeks.
Usually,
they've been rocking and rolling.
Mid-January, you get that peak, but it's still going. They're still getting it?
Yeah, it's still rocking and rolling, yep.
It's been interesting. I've seen some pretty darn good bucks killed this year, but I don't know that I've seen the number I saw last year at this time. And that's not scientific. That's watching just because Facebook is not truth, you know,
right.
What gets put up. It seems like I saw more bucks showing up, getting their picture made for Facebook this time last year than I have this year.
And it may be. I talked to our buddy Jay Graddick a little while ago.
He says they're down. He said they're down.
He said they're down. He said, but one of the reasons is because on the weekends, the weather's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when, you know, like last weekend,
yeah,
I didn't get to go, but it was raining all most of the weekend. So
yep.
A lot of people don't go. If it's nasty and wet, and especially in the Black Belt, and you got to go deal with that mud,
yeah,
a lot of people just, it ain't worth it to them.
No.
Even in rut. So I think that does hurt it some.
What's your thought? I mean, we had this discussion in the rain around the camp last weekend. I think most of us know that we like to go as the rain's ending.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe where the rain, you're watching the radar and you're wearing a rain jacket in, and then you take it off and hunt. What about hunting during that rain? Not a super hard rain, but like kind of like winter rain, like.
Most for me,
yeah,
you know, and I've hunted in rain many times through the years. I don't think they move as well. They'll still move some, but I don't think they move very well at all. But you let that rain stop, it's just you flip a switch on. They start moving,
yeah,
instantly.
And I think, you know, they're going to move because the does are moving. Also, when that would happen in kind of pre-rut, yeah, not now where they're chasing, but pre-rut, I think they go fresh in scrapes.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I see a lot of bucks working scrapes after those rains. All right, coming right back, we're going to talk some fishing as well this week. Captain Wayne Miller, I mean, we're getting, looking at February, big bass on the bed, spawn, all that kind of discussion we'll have with him coming up. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you here. Checking in with Captain Wayne Miller here in a little bit. Talk some bass fishing. Yeah. They're plumping up right now.
I'm sure they are. They're fattening up, and I'm sure Wayne is on top of them.
That's right. We're going to get a report from him coming up in a little bit. Something that we want to talk about, too, because you and I, during the break, were discussing one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, cameras.
So, yes. Cellular, you know, trail cameras, game cameras, whatever you call them.
And let me warn people right now. If you want to poach on Sean Sullivan's property,
don't tell people.
Yeah. You're going to better be smiling and don't stop and use the bathroom. Because he will catch you on a camera. He's got one on every other tree out there.
Well, you know, you got to do what you do. Well, and we got in a discussion of different manufacturers and the reason for different cameras and cellular cameras.
Yep.
You know, and I've been, you know, talking about, I use two different brands, but my main, I use Cutty Link.
Yeah.
So it's Cutty Back Company, the Cutty Link system. And I think it's worth talking about, too, because you and I were, during the news break, talking about it. Okay. Different, and I also have some spy points.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was looking at getting some cameras, and I was looking at some Brownings, and I was asking you some questions about that.
So the Brownings, let's talk about this. We'll just do this on the air here.
Yeah.
Are the Brownings networked, or are they individual?
No, they're individual.
Okay. How many cameras do you want to put out?
Well, I was going to get six.
Okay.
Okay.
You're right. Can you make it difficult? Because it might give you my opinion. You're right on the break.
Verge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if you have fewer cameras and let me go back this way. If you run a system like I run Cutty Link, it's going to demand more cameras as it is. Like Mike's jokes he makes about me, but it does because Cutty Link, you pay one subscription fee, right? You have the mother camera.
The mothership.
Yeah, the mother camera, which also works as a camera. So it's you can have 16 total. So and the mother camera being one of them. It still takes pictures, but it's the place that sends the cellular package of photos that pops into your email.
Right.
Okay. From that, your connection for your all these other cameras, the other 15, is based on topography, thickness of the woods, all those kind of things. Because people often ask me, well, Sean, how far can you space out cameras? And I say, yes, no.
Yeah.
You know, and they said, what do you mean? I said, well, it just depends on where you are. Some places, so let's say you had a big power line or right away or something like that, you could have cameras spaced out a long way if there's not a hill between them, right?
Right.
Where they can see each other. But if you get in some deeper woods or there's a, you know, a bottom and then a hill and then a bottom.
Probably about like a walkie-talkie.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so it's going to stop it. So what I'm getting to is, if y'all are not familiar, like the CuddyLink system, it links with the other cameras. All 15 link together, and if you space them correctly. So the farthest away camera from the mother camera links to the second farthest away, third farthest away, and it works its way in.
So they link picking back up those to pickets. Each other.
Right.
They so link. It's not linking from that camera to the mothership. It's linking to the
next
another
closest
camera, which might link to the next camera, which
correct.
Might link to, and then get to the mothership.
Correct. So if you're if you said, okay, I only want to have, and that's why I said you're on this breakpoint. If I only wanted to have so many cameras, okay, so I would have, let's say somebody said they're going to have four cameras. I would say I'd probably not do. I'd maybe do individual because the stretch of distance, if you had a square piece of property, and I'm going to have one in the old trusty field and one in the plantation field and one in the such and such field, you know, whatever.
Right.
And there's big distance between them. They're not going to be able to network to each other back to the mother camera.
Yeah.
So you might be better off with individual cellular cameras. Like that's why I have some spy points too. I put in the mix. I fill in gaps with spy point. Because they're individually linked versus the CuddyLink. So it's, but if you're going to cover, if you go, well, and that's why I'm not giving you distances. It could be a quarter mile, it could be a half mile, pretty rare. I mean, in the communications for the company, I don't know what they say. They'll probably tell you a half or three quarter. I'm telling you real world stuff for CuddyLink. Quarter, half mile, you're all right. But anything over that, you're rolling the dice.
And you answered my question just that way. I mean, I'm going to use them here in Alabama, but I'm also going to use them in Kansas. And
how far
Kansas,
is it between the
yeah,
spots?
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty good distance between each one of them. So
you
I
want
would be wasting my money buying the CuddyLink.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or if you even here at home, if you had property where you go, well, we got a 40 here, we got a 120 down the road.
Yes.
You know, a camper you have different parcels around, then you wouldn't want to go to a CuddyLink system. You want a Browning or a Spy Point or something like that, where you have an individual camera making that cellular connection. But if you want to cover a whole property, then and you're gonna, there's a reason to have that next camera at a quarter mile or a half mile away.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I do things like there's cameras I have that are essential to make some leaps on my property to get to the next place. If you want them just not to be, you can run them as, and they don't burn batteries much, you can run them as just a transfer camera without taking pictures. What I do is I end up putting a feeder there.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? That camera's really,
while waste just the camera.
The camera's really there to make a link between this camera and this other camera, but might as well put a, you know, observation feeder or whatever there, even if they're not a stand, to see what's in the neighborhood. That's how that works. And then you talked about the powering portion of it. So I run solar on most of mine,
okay,
but not all of mine.
With rechargeable batteries?
No batteries, because the battery's the battery's actually inside the solar panel.
Okay,
so it charges itself. You know, it's okay. There's not when with CuddyLink.
Yes.
There's no batteries in the camera. I pull the batteries out. You plug into the solar panel that has the battery built in that solar panel, and it mounts separately from the camera. You know, obviously you're going to try to get a south facing exposure and figure out, you know, where you get the sun best. Now, here's this thing. So I've been using these so long and doing this so much, I can give you some real-world stuff. Number one, if you're down in a deep, deep thicket, you're not going to get enough sun.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be somewhere that you get sun and get several hours. Well, more than that. You know, you get, you know, hopefully 6-7 hours of pretty good sun a day.
And all that's going to vary on how many pictures. If you put it on a corn pile.
Well, that's what I'm about to say.
You know, where they in and out and in and out and stay there forever. And, you know, you're taking pictures every minute or 3 minutes, whatever. You're going to burn up some batteries.
Yeah, so that's the real – yeah, you beat me to it. That's the real world. So you've got to have a place that has – you could get away with less sun and taking fewer pictures. You could set your period time between photos, you know. Instead of it being 30 seconds, 45 seconds a minute, you make it 5 minutes.
Yeah.
you know, and slow that down.
But you can miss a lot in 5 minutes.
You can.
Yes.
Then you work, but I'm just telling you the techniques for it. Or, you know, if you don't have a great sun, but it's just a trail camera, it's not on a feeder, it's, you know, a scrape line or something like that.
Right.
Then it's okay because you're going to get a couple pictures every day maybe from that. That's it. You
right.
Two, three pictures from a scrape line. You're not going to get that at the feeder, on a green field, those kind of pictures. So the solar there. But if you've got good sun, you got a spot, maybe it is in a green field or a power line or right away somewhere you get that sun. I've had some of them that are in the right spot. I hadn't touched them since I put a solar on them.
Really?
Hadn't touched them.
Yeah, so what?
Because number one, I don't have to touch them to get, you know, people are not familiar. These pictures are being delivered by email, so I don't ever have to go touch the camera or go in there. And I don't even have to change batteries on them. I mean, they just get it done. They're just working.
So you don't have any SD cards in there either?
There's an SD card in there where the camera, when it takes the picture, you got to think about this, that camera and the Cuddy Links takes a picture, stores it to the SD card until it's transfer time. And it's usually hour. It depends. Usually maybe hourly. At hourly, it then goes, okay, where's my next closest camera? It sends that batch of pictures to the next closest camera, and it stores that for a second on that SD card as it packages with those pictures, and now it sends it to the next down the line. So you do have to have an SD card in it. And there have been occasions that I'll pull the SD card, and there's pictures on the SD card that I didn't get sent to me. For some reason, there's too much volume or whatever happened.
Right.
So yeah, it store, because it's taken, like, say you have, you're get, it's sending pictures on an hour increment. Well, for that whole hour, it's got to store those pictures somewhere.
Right.
And it's on that SD card until the computer in there goes, okay, it's now 2 o'clock. And at 2 o'clock, we send to the next camera.
Yeah.
So they do have SD cards, but you set it up this way. And sometimes if a camera is on the edge and do I push how far I can get a camera from another one? And maybe on a clear day or a certain day it's working, you're getting an acceptable connection, then the weather goes south and you don't get it, and that camera sits there and it's trying to make the connection, which can run down the batteries too.
Yes.
And just like a cell phone, when you travel outside, when it's trying to get signal, it burns through battery fast.
That's right.
So same thing on those. But before, you know, and sometimes you'll get pictures, be like, those pictures are 2 days old. It's because it was having trouble making that connection.
Yeah. If you don't have a good cell service,
right,
it's just sitting there just thinking the whole time.
Well, cell is not a Bluetooth service because it's a proprietary Bluetooth that connects those cameras together. There's something, they have a connection, camera to camera to camera. When it finally gets to the mother camera, that's where it goes, okay, cellular network, here's the big package of photos, and it, bing, goes into your email.
Yeah. So you'll get a lot of pictures at one time.
Right. Hourly, you get an update from all the cameras.
Okay.
One thing I don't like about Cuddy Link, and you know, that I'd like to have happen, so by spot points, I can separate my pictures by camera because they're coming in from individual cameras.
Yeah.
Like, you see, I could open this app on my phone, and I can choose this camera, that camera, and I can see, I don't care about that. I just want to see these right now.
Right.
Cuddy Link, you get them from all the cameras, anything that got taken and sent, all come in at one time. So it could be from all your 16 cameras, and there's not a way to organize them other than you doing it yourself.
Yeah,
and taking
them
out.
One might be from camera number one,
yep,
and one might be from camera 12,
yep,
one from camera six, and
yep,
you know, the next one's from camera
right.
two.
So they're just
so
all batched.
You have
batched
to look at it and say, where is that?
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So
you would think that you got your cameras out and you know exactly where that's at, but I've only got three cameras out up at my camp where I'm hunting now, you know, here, and I have to look at it sometimes. Now, where is that? You know?
Well, I that only happens to me in like the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Because I hear that go off and I want to go look at pictures when I'm bleary eyed. But yeah, when I'm up and awake, I can pick them. But yeah, so that's if you have a proper, you kind of want to blanket and cover, and Cuddy Link is great.
Yeah.
Solar system with those are fantastic as long as you got sun. If you have parcels all around separate, or you only want a few cameras on a bigger place, then I'd go with something like SpyPoint or Browning or something like that.
Okay, that answers my question.
There we go.
I hope we answered some other people's questions.
Coming back, we'll ask questions of Captain Wayne Miller about bass fishing. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad you're along with us. And we'll revisit that, too, if people want in the future, trail camera stuff. Because there's different, like, there's different reasons for different, you know, a linked system versus individual system depends on your property.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn about all that stuff, I can tell you.
And the solar stuff is good. You get, and most of these cameras we just talked about have some solar capability. Like I have solar, yes. I can run on my spot points too. So
yeah, all the new stuff just about's got that.
And when you set it right, then you, what is the old thing? You set it and forget it. Like that.
Yep. You walk away.
Yeah, you walk away. Don't have to go back in there. I mentioned that we get to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller and talk some bass fishing. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. And I guess as we get started, because I want to talk about bass fishing and now and then looking forward to February, March, talk about the spawn. But you mentioned something before we went on. I think it's an important thing to talk about as well, that a super popular ramp and launch is going to be closed for repairs, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're doing some upgrades at Steel Creek Landing there in Satsuma. So my understanding is that they'll actually be closed. They closed it this past Monday, and it'll be out of commission for at least 3 months. So pretty significant, you know, time it'll be down. And that's a high-traffic launch. You know, it's really our best launch over on the west side of the Delta. So just wanted to get that word out so, you know, people won't be pulling over there on Saturday morning and get their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, they're going to be – there's already plenty of I'm not going to say anything to anybody. So there's going to be a lot more traffic at Saraland. That launch is going to be bizarre.
And Chickasabogue.
Yeah, Chickasabogue, too.
Yep.
Be a lot more traffic in there.
And, you know, they'll be, especially when people are wanting to kind of target that mid part of the Delta, you know, it'll increase the traffic probably. You know, a lot of people will go to Live Oak or go to Cliffs. So, and Cliffs is, man, that place is, it's at capacity every weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to really kind of tax our resources here over the next couple of months, but you know, just have to take that into account when you're planning on your trips.
So on the west side, where else? I know you got Chickasabogue, you've got Saraland.
Yeah, you've got a public launch there in Saraland.
Okay, and then you got Dead Lake.
Dead Lake, yeah, and you know, Dead Lake, I mean, it'll probably absorb a lot of the traffic too, but you know, it's you know, you just, depending on where you're targeting the fish and the Delta, you know, typically determines what launch you use.
That's right.
Unless you have a time machine like Captain Wayne.
Being able to access the Mobile, you know, right there off the Steel Creek Landing, you know, it was a real popular launch.
Sure it is. Absolutely. Well, at least I got other options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about us. We're gonna get those boats in the water.
Yeah, I know that's right. Let's talk about like what's going on right now, and then I want to start looking to the future with you. So, first of all, how's fishing been?
Well, man, this past week was really—I mean, it was a super week. You know, we had, you know, kind of like we typically have this time of year. You know, we started out the week with some south wind, and you know, we had that, what was supposed to be a really bad storm event come through, and we had some south wind associated with that, and it puffed the water up quite a bit down on the lower end. I remember, I think it was Wednesday, you know, they had one lane of the causeway closed because, you know, the water was actually backed up that much onto the road.
Yeah, that eastbound lane will go under.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, I mean, we turned around, we got that north wind, and by Thursday, it moved that water out pretty good, and, you know, that really helped a lot. But from the standpoint of the actual fishing, you know, it really hadn't hurt it that bad. I mean, what we're looking at right now is we do have a rise on the rivers. So they're projecting a crest on the Mobile at around a little over 8 feet by Monday or Tuesday of this coming week. And but, you know, this north wind we got, that helped that some. And, you know, just depending on, you know, how it goes, you know, that water should drop out pretty quick. But the lower delta is held up really good. I mean, the creeks are in good shape. You know, you've got some that are stained up pretty good, but, you know, I guess the biggest challenge anytime you talk about bass fishing, irregardless of whether you're on this delta or you're on an inland reservoir or wherever you're fishing, is finding the fish.
And, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a challenge
there is that.
Here right now because we know where they are.
And that is, as people have not heard you tell them before, where are they?
You know, they're in the creeks adjacent to the bays on the lower end of the delta. I mean, that's the only place they've got to be. They're not going to get out in those muddy rivers, you know, with that flow coming down them. They're going to migrate into those creeks, and that's where they're going to be until the water warms up enough where they can migrate out in those bays and spawn.
What is that? Hey, what is that temperature? What's that magic? What's the magic temperature, Captain Wayne?
You know, what we see, you know, we'll have fish, you know, spawn in the upper 60s here. You know, when we have a good full moon, be it January and February. I mean, if that water warms up that much, they'll move up and spawn. So, you know, there's not necessarily, you know, like a lot of people think, you know, that all of the fish spawn at one time, and that's far from the truth. You know, you'll have waves that'll move in on every full moon. And, how that pecking order is determined, that's Mother Nature, and that's way above my pay grade.
Yeah.
But
forget about the calendar to some degree, right? I mean, the two things are that water temperature and those full moons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they do not have a calendar. You know, I mean, they strictly go by, you know, that water temperature. And, you know, like right now, most of the creeks down there on the causeway, you know, I was on the water today. And, you know, you're looking at anywhere from, you know, 52 to 58, 60-degree water temperature, depending on the water clarity and the depth. But, you know, the amazing thing about that water down there is you can take 58-degree water, well, as shallow as it is, and especially if it's got a little stain on it, you get 2 or 3 days of this bright sunshine, and, man, it can bump up to 65, 68 degrees quick.
So, I mean, conceivably, even in the same kind of general area, you know, let's say South Delta or something like that, you could have this creek over here because it's muddy or whatever. It warms up more quickly. There's fish that are on spawn in this creek, and you could go, I don't know, a mile, whatever, 2 miles away to another creek that they're not because the water's different, right? That they're might not be going
–
like we'd understand the spawn being different going north and south generally on the river system, but you could even east and west have a difference.
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of that is dependent on – how these creeks are positioned off the main river.
Yeah, do they get flow through? Yeah.
With both flow on the rivers and the tidal effects, you know, these creeks pull differently. That water moves in and out of those creeks much differently depending on how they're positioned off those main rivers. So no two of them are identical. And, you know, that's really what you have to take into account. And even now, you know, pre-spawn, you know, one thing that I tell people within these creeks, you know, these fish, now they're stacked in those creeks, but they will migrate, you know, back and forth in those creeks based on what the water clarity looks like and that temperature. You know, if that muddy water is pushing in off the river, most of those fish aren't going to stay in that muddy water. They'll keep migrating up in those creeks further.
So kind of with where we sit right now, you've got temperatures in the 50s. You said in the 50s, different places. 60 being that. Do you think we're – obviously, you don't know. I mean, we could have all kind of different weather things happen the next 2 weeks. But are we within 2 weeks of some spawning fish? Are we within 3 weeks? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we could definitely be within – some spawning fish within 2-3 weeks. And, you know, and that's, you know, I've been doing really well down there on, you know, some standard baits that you throw pre-spawn and during the spawn. I mean, you know, the lizards are really working well as far as soft plastic. But, you know, we're power fishing. I mean, I've been catching a lot of fish on spinner baits. And, you know, I mean, these fish, they're in the go mode.
So they're pretty active right now. They're pretty active, even though the water's still 60, 50 something degrees, 60 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
They're still active.
Yeah, you know, yeah, man, you know, anything above about 52 to 53, 54 degrees, man, these fish, they love those 50s. But now when you have these, you know, pretty massive cold fronts and we see those water temperatures really drop and get down in that 50 to below range, that's pretty good. Slows things down quite a bit.
Captain Wayne, let's come right back. We'll pick it up there as we continue talking about some pre-spawn and spawn fishing with Captain Wayne Miller right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, talking to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller, talking bass fishing. I'm going to just set this up for next week's show or soon. So I've been, and I mentioned it on Midday Mobile a couple times, Clint Jameson over at Adventure Bicycles has put me on one of these e-bikes.
Yeah.
Man. So I knew I'd like it some. I said, I'll use it for some hunting once in a while. So I've ridden to the stand. It's what I use to run my puppy, my German short hair, to wear him out. You can ride it like a regular bike with a little bit of assist, or you can take your feet off that thing, and it's got a throttle, and it moves on big fat tires on it. It's tan color, like, you know, woods color, and solid. I rode absolutely within 10 yards of two yearlings the other day, and they just kind of went, "What just happened?" And they just,
"What was that?"
Yeah, and then they just went back to doing what they're doing.
And at SHOT Show, I saw maybe 10 to 15 different brands.
Yeah.
What was the main one? Cat, Quiet Cat.
Yeah,
that was
so
the first one I saw.
So yeah, I'm running the Scout is the one I'm riding. It's awesome.
Right,
so Clint's going to come on the show with us soon. But yeah, if you want to go see what I've been riding, go ask him down at Adventure Earth Bicycles Airport in Little Flower, kind of across from Bruce Chris.
Yep.
He's got like 50 different e-bikes in there. All right. Continue our conversation with Captain Wayne Miller. And so
Wayne's saying, what's that got to do with bass fishing?
Well, you could ride the e-bike down to meet Captain Wayne to get on the boat with him, right?
Yeah.
That'd be good. No, but I'm interested here because here we are closing out January. February is, I guess in the past always thought it's a calendar thing. And so I'd think about February starting spawning fish, but it doesn't matter. I mean, if we had a really cold winter, it could be a lot later. If we had a real warm winter, it could be a lot earlier, right?
Yeah, it really could. So, but you know, the real key there is, you know, again, that water temperature and those, you know, those bays can warm up so fast. It's really incredible. You know, you can't base anything off those main rivers because with them having typically they're going to be stained to muddy, you know, for the next couple of months. But with the flow and everything on them, you know, that water temperature is going to, you know, stay pretty consistently cold in those main rivers. But, you know, these bays, you know, they will warm up. It's incredible how fast that water temperature will come up.
Yeah, some I've always thought about too is if you go watch some show about bass or read a magazine article and they'll talk about the spawn, they're saying, well, look for hard structure, you know, or sandy bottom where they're making the nest and laying the. There's only so much of that we have. Is it mostly on wood that you see them, or are they anywhere? There's, I mean, where are they spawning in the Delta that they get that harder structure?
Well, you know, I mean, there are places where they have that hard structure. I mean, but, you know, down on the causeway, I mean, there's tons of areas where you've got oyster shells. I mean, you've got hard hard bottoms that get silted over. But, you know, those fish are capable of fanning those areas and getting a bed.
Yeah. You know, grass is, I mean, a lot of them bedding in the grass in those bays.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I remember years ago back in the, actually the late 70s and the early 80s, I was going over to Toledo Bend, and a buddy of mine that actually owned a camp over there, he was telling me about how he was on a pattern catching spawning fish on the trees. And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, they'll actually spawn on the trees, like on the big limbs and stuff."
Okay, so the horizontal stuff.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, these fish, you know, irregardless of where you're talking about, here or anywhere else, I mean, fish are incredibly, you know, they can adapt to their environment. And, you know, they're definitely going to find areas that are harder for that purpose. But, you know, a lot of these bays, just like Mike's talking about with the grass, I mean, you know, all it takes is a relatively small area for them to bed. So, I mean, they can clean out a little spot in that grass and, you know, they'll do their thing right there.
Yeah, and it's something, it's kind of like lakes. You kind of contribute it to like a private lake somewhere. The shallower the lake is, the warmer it's going to get, the quicker it's going to get warm, and the quicker the spawn's going to be.
Yeah, like small shallow lakes should be
first.
But
if you got a bigger lake and it's got deeper water, it takes longer for that water to warm up, and the spawn is later. So it's a lot like that.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the lakes, especially, you know, let's just say up where I fish up the country, usually by about the middle of February, things are rocking and rolling. The spawn is on.
Yeah.
And it depends on weather, but typically every year somewhere around the middle of February to the end of February.
Right.
So start looking now. And once again, you talked about some of the baits you're using, but what we've got about a minute and a half left. Looking into February and that, what are we throwing?
You know, for these pre-spawn fish that are in these real shallow areas, you know, the key power baits here on the Delta are obviously, you know, spinner baits always been, you know, a fantastic bait to throw. You know, and a lot of people throw the inline, you know, the Sallies. But, you know, a lot of people throw conventional, you know, spinner baits, you know, like the Man's Classic. And, you know, there's a lot of spinner baits you can try. But, you know, probably one of the most versatile baits that's really taken over that particular pattern, you know, pre-spawn and grass over the last few years has been the chatterbait. And, you know, it's a fantastic tool to cover a lot of water. And, you know, you can, you know, there's just unlimited combinations of colors and trailers that you can put on there. So, you know, you can get on a little wrinkle with a chatterbait, something that nobody else is throwing. And, you know, you can really wreck them. I mean, I try some crazy, you know, I approach trying to pick out my chatterbait colors kind of like a golfer picking out clothes, you know, the gaudier the better, man. I just want something crazy, you know. I want a red body and a blue skirt and then a pink trailer on it or something, you know. And it's amazing sometimes, I mean, for, you know, a week or so, you'll just absolutely smash them on some crazy-looking coat.
Yeah, we'll all go get real gaudy. Remind folks, if they have not got your number written down, they want to book a trip with you, how do they do it?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
Thank you, Captain Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne.
All right, guys.
All right. Yeah, you too. And we're out. We'll see you next week for another edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.